Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And now it's time for the Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show with Hub Arkish, Patrick Manley, and Olin Krutz on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Sportsbook. Go to BetRivers.com or download the Bet Rivers app from the App Store now. And MailMedChicago.com, where a full head of hair is the winning play.
Welcome in, everybody. Good morning. Good afternoon, I guess, here in Chicago. Yes, a Chicago Bears time change. They will take on the Indianapolis Colts at 3:25 this afternoon. And so we have our Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show with Olin Krutz and Patrick Manley. I am Hub Arkish, and we're going to be with you right up until Bears kickoff. Before I even bring the guys in, one of the things we've been doing every week is giving you our Bet Rivers plays of the week. And with the late start, I don't want you to miss out on this because Olin Krutz is red hot. Olin has picked 8 of 9 games correctly. He was 3-0 last week. He is 8-1 on the season. He's saying take the Chargers, the Vikings, and the Cardinals today. So I don't know what the times are on those games, but Olin is liking the Chargers, the Vikings, and the Cardinals against the spread. Patrick did well last week, was 2-1. He says take the 49ers, the Saints, and the Bills. That's the 49ers, the Saints, and the Bills. I'm pretty sure that that Buffalo game is later, so I know we're okay with that. And I was 2-1 last week as well. I like the Packers tomorrow night, the Cowboys today, and the Rams, even given those 13 points. So we'll repeat those for you a little bit later, but if any of those are earlier starts, I wanted to make sure that you had them. And now I want to say good morning to Patrick Manley and Olin Krutz. Olin, who knew you were such a handicapping guru, man? It's going well for you so far.
Oh, no, Hub. This is not about competition. And I stay humble. I've been taught by you, Hub. I've been taught by Yoda of the radio station that you don't. So don't try to pull me in. You're trying to pull me down, Hub, and I can feel it.
No, I'm not trying to get you to go after Patrick and me. I'm just letting our listeners know that, you know, you got to ride these hot streaks.
It's like the Bears, Hub. You know, I may be doing good now, but you're only as good as your last game.
That's true. It does catch up with us all eventually, but get them while they're hot. So, again, Olin says Chargers, Vikings, Cardinals. Patrick says...
No. I wanted Bucks, right? Let me recheck my text. Wrong? Make sure I did that right.
Let me see here.
We're Let's working
get
on it.
Right for you. Here we go.
I'll take the Bucks.
Okay, yeah. You did. Yeah. You said Chargers at Bucks. I'll take the Bucks. I apologize for that, guys. All right, if you made a call back.
Hub, it's not about them. It's about me. And I took the Bucks.
There you go. You've got the Bucks, the Texans, and the Cardinals. So I had Minnesota wrong, too. I am sorry, guys. I am really screwing you up here. I got to read Olin's text more carefully. Olin is saying take the Bucks, the Texans, and the Cardinals. I think I had Pat's right. He had the 49ers,
yes, he did.
The Saints, and the Bills, and I have the Packers, the Cowboys, and the Rams. We'll get to those for you again a little later. Just wanted you to have the early games. Guys, all kinds of things going on in the NFL. We're hoping to have a very special guest join us in just a few minutes. So before we get to that a little earlier, Where Are They Now segment today, just these late week activities. First, the Pittsburgh-Tennessee game is canceled. It was the best game on the slate during the COVID outbreak in Tennessee, and they are continuing to get more positive tests out of Tennessee. Two more players yesterday. They're up to 13 total members of the Titans, so that is a legitimate outbreak. And then the news yesterday morning that Cam Newton has tested positive in New England. Nobody else has yet. They've held the Patriots in the Boston area before traveling to Kansas City. Reports yesterday where they were hoping to have them fly out today and play Monday or Tuesday. We don't have any update on that yet, or at least I haven't. I've been buried in some other stuff the last hour or so. And so you've got one game postponed indefinitely, although probably will be replayed week 7, Pittsburgh, Tennessee. They're able to move some byes around there. Don't know what happens with the Patriots and the Chiefs, whether they can go tomorrow or Tuesday. You know, Pat, I'll come to you first. It would seem somewhat unlikely because even though, you know, all of the Patriots, and I believe a Chiefs player tested positive yesterday too, even though all of the Patriots players have tested negative following the positive test with Cam Newton, you know, everything we've heard is that you're supposed to self-isolate or quarantine for some period of time. There's a dispute as to how many days that is, whether it's 5 or 6 or 10 or 14 after you've been exposed to someone with the virus. To put the Patriots on a plane now would seem a bit unwise, but we don't know what the league is going to do. The belief is because these guys are getting tested every day, it's a little safer. But this is the big test for the NFL. This is what everybody's been worried about. And you get more than a handful of games postponed or canceled, the schedule becomes unworkable.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And Olin said it last week. He's not a doctor. I'm not a doctor either. So I'm putting my trust in the doctors for the Bears and the ones the NFL have hired to figure all this out. You know, going to bed last night with the test about the Saints fullback, I thought the old NFL was going to be done. I mean, just the way Twitter was reacting to everything, it was a little crazy. But I think the one thing we can all do as fans of sports is just look at baseball. You know, the Miami Marlins, they had an outbreak, yes, and everybody's threw their hands up in the air and said, oh my gosh, this is over, this is over. Well, they figured it out. And I think the NFL can do the same thing. And I just believe in the doctors and I believe in the NFL that they can do the right thing to figure this out. I don't think they're going to put guys in their harm's way by putting them on the airplane if that's not the way to do it. But I just believe in these doctors and what we've seen with Major League Baseball. I think everything's going to be okay. I think there's going to be some hiccups. I think we all expected that. And I'm sure and I hope the NFL has planned for this and has contingency plans of how to work around this and get this done. Maybe you extend the season a couple weeks. Maybe you shorten the season. Sure, there's a way they can just figure this thing out. But it was interesting going to bed last night and, you know, reading Twitter and everybody's, oh, this is over. It's over. I'm like, just take it. Take the deep breath. We got some smart people figuring this thing out and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, and you know, one thing we are absolutely not going to do here is politics. We're just not going to get into it other than to say that I know I speak for both of you when we say we wish everybody who is struggling with this virus, you know, Godspeed, a quick recovery. We hope everybody is healthy and back to normal as soon as possible. And that certainly starts, you know, with the president and his family, all the politicians. But I think that is complicating things right now because it has been the 24-hour news cycle for the last 48, 72-hour days, 72 hours. We don't know exactly what's going on in Washington. And so now with the NFL having this happen at the same time, I mean, I don't take anything on Twitter seriously, but just as far as the conversation and everything, it's understandable, you know, why people are concerned and a little freaked out and probably ready to panic a little more than usual right now.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just, you know, we're not doctors, so it's hard to speak on it. It's not my expertise. When you do talk to doctors who are experts, they always end with the sentence, but we don't really know. Mm-hmm. And nobody really knows. And hopefully the NFL can lead the way and you know, get some solutions here as far as the COVID goes. But the one thing that, you know, you're always watching for is, okay, well, how many people are getting really sick from it and are guys recovering from it? And it looks like they are. The NFL has played over 60-something games. These are only two that have been canceled so far in the middle of this pandemic. So they've been doing something right. I mean, there's just so many things confusing about this that for me to speak on it like an expert would be foolish. So, like Pat said, I'll try to let the doctors figure it out. There's a lot of smart people around this NFL logo. And the thing that you're hoping for is that they do kind of figure out how to do it. Or even on the other side, they figure out if we can't do it. And they figure out if it's not safe at all. And if it isn't, then they probably should shut it down. But if they can get through it, then hopefully it can lead to, you know, we already see colleges playing, but hopefully it can lead to younger kids even getting back to what they love to do. So everybody's watching, very interested in what is going on and what the outcome of this whole process is going to be.
Yeah, and folks, just to be really clear, and I think I can speak for Olin and Patrick, and I know I can because we heard what they just said. We're not saying there's a right or wrong here. We're not offering suggestions. We're not pretending to have answers that nobody else in the world does. It's been an interesting week because we were cruising along saying, boy, look at the NFL. None of the problems that baseball had or even the early concerns with a couple tests that came back positive in the NBA and the NHL. And yet now it seems to kind of all be hitting at once. And so the question is, as both Pat and Olin just alluded to, is we assume there are contingency plans. We don't know what those contingency plans are. We would assume that the way they've reacted to the situation in Nashville and what they're now doing with the Patriots and the Chiefs is consistent with those contingency plans. But with no additional knowledge, it's hard to say. The only part that I'm kind of focused on, guys, is that the NFL is different from all of the other sports, but particularly from baseball, because you can't just play doubleheaders. You know, you only play once a week, and the schedule is such that as soon as you miss a game or two, it starts to mess with the schedules of every team in the league, not just the four teams in those two games. And so I think that is the concern. And so when we talk about a contingency plan, is there a plan to delay the season, to add extra weeks at the end? You know, guys, I think one thing we can say with some certainty is that just based on where we're at now, it seems pretty unlikely that the Super Bowl would be played with a full stadium and you know, 4,000 media members and this and that. And so the idea of pushing the Super Bowl back if they had to is not as outlandish as it would be if you were trying to hold a normal Super Bowl. So that is something that we can hang on to. If they do have to build a few weeks into this season, they should be able to do it. And, you know, Pat, I think all that we all want is, first of all, for everybody to be safe and healthy, but mm-hmm. secondly, we want to see a 16-game NFL season with regular playoffs and a real Super Bowl champ.
You know, we do, but I'll go back to baseball again. You know, baseball had to do what they had to do, and I still think everybody was pleased with, you know, the fact they just got to play a semblance of a season. If the NFL gets to play 16 games, that's awesome. I hope they do. But if they got to somehow alter it and get down to 14 games, 13 games, whatever it is, I just want people to kind of – you remember that first Sunday we had and how excited we were to see each other on Zoom and talk NFL football? You know, I just think that's important to the people, that if we can stay safe, that they play as much as they can, do it as safe as they can, and just try to get a game in there for not only the players to play, but just for us fans to enjoy it as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Pat. I mean, they're going to have to adjust at some point, and now they're adjusting. I don't think anybody thought they were going to get through the whole season totally clean, right? So mm-hmm. here we are, and obviously the first 3 or 4 weeks probably went better than anybody thought it could have went with what everything we heard about contact sports. And yet we're here in week 4 after, like we talked about, 60-plus games, and they finally got to where they had to move or cancel 2 games. So they're going to have to adjust. And, yeah, you know, you say 14, I say 10 or 12, whatever the sure. number is, you get to the playoffs, and then you try to get to a Super Bowl because that just like the team that adjusts the best to this whole situation, the league has to adjust too and just get to an end somehow this year.
Yeah, guys, I do think that the integrity of the game is obviously an issue here too. It's not just about the virus spreading. It's about possibly having players out there playing, not knowing that they're sick yet and maybe not able to perform to their full potential because of it. So all kinds of things to look at here. So far, it hasn't been terribly interrupted. I think that's what we're going to have to continue to hope for. We'll bring you the news as it's happening. I'm sure it's going to be happening all day long. Guys, we're going to take a very quick break here. We are hoping to be joined by our Where Are They Now guest in just a moment. And so we're going to try and squeeze this one in first. We're back in just a moment with the Bet River Sportsbook pregame show right here at 670 The Score. Welcome back, everybody, to our Bet Rivers pregame show, our Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show. Be sure and download the Bet Rivers Sportsbook app. Easiest way for you to play. We did give you our picks a little bit earlier. We tried to get in before the early kickoffs, our Bet Rivers plays of the week. It's funny, of all the things I didn't expect to be getting hit up on Twitter and email all the time, I'm getting people, what are the picks, you know, and so We'll give them to you. We all have winning records, but Olin is out front. Olin is asking me not to talk too much about that because we don't want to jinx the streak. You know, so we'll see what happens.
That's like asking about a no-hitter, Hub.
Yeah, I know. I blew it. But it's all good, guys. At this point, I'll give them to you one more time, then we'll do it later where we normally do it in the show. Olin has taken the Bucks. He has taken Houston and Arizona. Patrick has taken the 49ers, the Saints, and the Bills. And I have taken the Packers, the Cowboys, and the Rams. So we're actually giving you opinions on 9 different games today. It will be interesting since we have all been winning. But keep an eye on it, and we'll have fun with it all season long. Guys, we were talking going into the break about all the craziness. You know, we don't have answers about the virus. We're like everybody else. You know, we just are hopeful. But, you know, we certainly can talk about how it impacts players in the frame of, you know, like any other, you know, unexpected change or crisis. In particular, people have been asking me all last night, all this morning, oh, you know, how big a deal is it the Bears are going from noon to 3:25? Week 4 of the season, you know, having played Sunday every week, the difference between the noon kickoff and the 3:25 kickoff, I can't imagine that has a tremendous impact on anybody on the Colts and the Bears. But, you know, guys, I don't know. We can get back to that in a few minutes, though, because we do have our Where Are They Now guest with us. And Chris, I've been cautious about promoting your appearance because we were really excited to get you. But knowing what's going on around the league, we didn't know if you're going to be able to take a few minutes or not. Guys, the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts, Chris Ballard, is now an NFL Executive of the Year, also a longtime Chicago Bears scout member of the Bears front office, was a candidate, or at least believed to be a candidate at one time for a Bears GM job. He's killing it in Indy right now and is good enough to join us today. Chris, we really appreciate you taking time out for us this morning. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Chris, we've got, of course, Patrick Manley and Olin Kreutz here, and we've been talking. We've been trying to talk about what's going on with the league with this public health crisis without pretending that we have any answers. I can't imagine what this does to front offices and to you guys trying to anticipate what's next as this news kind of breaks every couple hours and then things seem to change. How difficult is this for you to manage as a general manager?
Well, I can tell you this. We can't anticipate it either. Frank and I sat down kind of when we figured we were going to get started again, and we just said, look, we're going to take it day by day. We're not going to worry about the problem. You can't worry about the problem. You can't sit and fret and agonize over what the problem is. We're going to do what the league says and take care of the testing and the protocols and wear a mask and do things the right way, but we got to get a football team ready to play. And look, we're fortunate because Frank's done a great job with our team. Our team understands what's at stake. And, you know, we feel good when we're in the building, but, you know, we're not in a bubble. You know, I get frustrated when people say we're in a bubble. We're not in a bubble. You know, we all got to go home to families. I got 5 kids and a wife, and they've got a life to live. And all our players have wives and families, and they got to live. So we've educated our families on, you know, there's going to be some sacrifices that have to be made by all of us, including them. And, you know, we're doing the best we can, but we take it day by day and we concentrate on the things we can control. And what we can control is taking care of our business and making sure we're doing things right and getting ready to play each and every day.
Hey, Chris, Olin Kreutz here, man. Congratulations on all your success. I think anybody who was in the building during your years in Chicago and watched the way you carried yourself and how hard you worked knew that eventually you'd be in the big seat making the big decisions. And just really, really happy to watch all your success. My question for you is that when you think about Matt Eberflus' defense, and, you know, we all know that from the Lovie Smith and the Rob Marinelli era, and you need a 3 technique there like Tommy Harris or Warren Sapp. And I'm looking at your guys' team in the offseason and your D-line. And just my question is, how the hell do you pull off that trade for DeForest Buckner? Because I'm thinking there's no way they can get a three technique in that spot. And you, now you got one of the best in the league. You call John Lynch and get him from them. I'm just wondering how that all worked out for you guys.
Yeah, well, sometimes you just get lucky. I wish I could say it was some grand plan. I'm close with John. And, you know, they had, you know, sometimes the stars just meet. I mean, they had players up that they weren't going to be able to pay all of them. And, you know, they had Armstead, they had Kittle, and they had Buckner. And, you know, Buckner ended up being kind of the odd guy out at the end of the day. And, you know, timing and my relationship with John just happened to work out. We feel fortunate to get him because, I mean, look, you practice against that defense enough, and knowing that, like, the two spots you have to have are the three technique and the will. Well, we had Darius that we had drafted a couple years before, but finding a three technique that can disrupt is very difficult to do. So we felt lucky to get DeForest. And not only he would have fit in really well with the group in Chicago because he stands, you know, when we were there, because he stands for all the right things. I mean, this guy goes to work each and every day. You don't see much difference between the way he practices and game day. And it's really fun to watch and see, and we feel fortunate to have him.
Hey, Chris, good to talk to you, man. It's always been a pleasure to talk to you. You'd always enjoy talking to you back in, like, training camp times when you guys were back at Hallis Hall when you were one of the scouts for the Bears. You'd always pick my brain about long snapping, so I got to pick your brain about scouting because I know that's your background, is the true scouting. How the heck do you find these small school guys that turn in to be such good players like Darius Leonard and this Mo Alley Cox, number 81, the tight end for you guys?
You know, I kind of look back. So, my career started in Kingsville, Texas, where I was just fortunate to work for Coach Harms, Ron Harms. And he would always tell us that, you know, A&M, it used to be Texas A&I, and they had a great history of small school players going and making it in the NFL, from John Randall to Daryl Green, Johnny Bailey, Heath Sherman, just this plethora of great talent that came through there. So he would always tell us, don't settle when you're on the road recruiting. This is our standard of what we want to recruit. We want to recruit kids that we can win games with, but also are NFL-type players. And the history there, from Eugene Upshaw to Al Harris to Robert Garza, who, you know, played for us in Chicago, that kind of gave me an indication to be able to watch those guys work and practice every day. So when I went into other small schools, you could see the guys that would stick out that, you know, everybody says, well, the level of competition. Well, you know, I always disagree with that, because if they're dominant at that level, they got a good chance to be dominant and play good football when they get in the NFL. And, you know, from Johnny Knox to Daniel Manning, you know, just a couple guys we had in Chicago that both were from Abilene Christian, Robert, who, you know, was a great longtime Bear and still a really close friend of mine. So I always tell our scouts, don't eliminate these small school players just because of the school. Look at the traits. Does he have the talent? And if he does, a lot of times those guys have chips on their shoulders. And, you know, Darius lives with a chip on his shoulder because he wasn't recruited by Clemson. And, you know, even as good as he's played, it's been fun to watch because he has not lost the chip at all.
Hub Arkush, Patrick Manley, and Olin Kreutz on your Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show, visiting with the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts, Chris Ballard, of course, longtime Chicago Bears scout and personnel expert as well. And Chris, I heard a rumor. Well, it's actually not a rumor. It was Matt who told us this. Apparently, I think it was Matt Nagy's oldest son and your oldest son were good friends or best friends in Kansas City. The families would spend parts of Easter together. Obviously, you know Matt well. What would you say as a general manager to Bears Nation, your observations of Matt Nagy, head coach?
Well, look, that's tremendous. I mean, you know, our relationships goes back to 2013 when I left Chicago and It was Andy Reid's first year, and he hired Matt as the quarterback coach. And, you know, Matt and I connected pretty quickly, you know, like-minded in a lot of ways. And, you know, our families became very close and still are to this day. I'll tell you a story. The summer of 2018, I think it was, I come home, and their son, his son was, Tate, was playing in a baseball tournament at Grand Park close to my house. And I was coming home from work, and I look out on the golf course, and there's the three Nagy boys and then my boys and all the neighborhood boys on the first hole that got bases set up and they're playing baseball, you know, kind of like they did in Kansas City. So, no, the families were close. And, look, Matt's done a good job. He knows what he wants. He knows what he wants to do. He was trained by what I think is one of the best coaches to ever coach him in the National Football League, and Andy Reid. And they've done a tremendous job. You know, I know they had a little back, you know, came back to the pack a little bit last year at 8-8. But when I watch the tape and watching them, you know, Chicago's got a very good football team. And now, you know, adding Nick Foles, who Matt knows very well from our time in Chicago and his time, he was on that staff that drafted him in Philly. It makes them a very dangerous team.
Hey, Chris, I was wondering when I was looking at going over prepping for this interview, and I know that you were under Jerry Angelo for all those years, and then John Dorsey in Kansas City, and you're preparing all that time to be a general manager. What was it like the first time you actually had the final decision in 2017? I'm sure you were comfortable because all the prep work you did, but just what was it like? What was different than you thought it would be when you were the guy who made the final call?
And I learned this from both of them. And so, like, Jerry was great from the standpoint that even though I was an area scout, he pulled the curtain back. Like, we got to see everything. And I really think that helped me grow through the years. You know, I'm scouting the Southwest, but I'm getting to see why we made decisions. You know, what was the reasoning behind this decision? And John was the same way. John would pull back the curtain. It's not like that everywhere. You know, a lot of times they just ask for the information and, you know, get out of the way. But I was fortunate to work for two bosses that allowed me to see everything and how it worked and why they made decisions. And then Andy was outstanding when it came to, look, whatever we do, whatever decisions you make falls on your shoe, in your lap. And the one thing I think I was pretty prepared for, and this is how I roll anyways. I mean, when stuff goes wrong, it's my fault. And to me, that's the biggest difference between being, you know, underneath, is that, you know, you're shielded from your boss when problems occur. And, you know, I thought one of the great things with Andy is he never pointed blame at anybody else when things didn't go that way. I mean, look, nobody cares about your problems. They don't. They're just glad you got them. And when things don't go wrong, it falls at on my desk, and deservedly so. And I'll never shy away from that. That's just kind of how I was built in this business and growing up. That's the biggest difference, Olin, is when things go wrong, there's nobody to shield you. It's you. And you got to be able to stand up and, you know, be held accountable. And, you know, don't try to spin the story. It is what it is. And, you know, we'll figure out how to fix it and move forward.
Hey, Chris, we spent a lot of years together in Chicago, and you said Jerry Angelo, you know, let you behind the scenes quite a bit. Can you take us, Olin and I, upstairs and maybe tell us your favorite story, memory of something that happened that maybe we didn't know? Because, you know, us downstairs in the locker room and you guys upstairs, a lot of decisions were made that we had no idea about. But maybe there's something you could leak now without telling on anybody or just giving a good story.
I'll never forget when Olin, and I wasn't in the building, but I'll never forget when Olin, there's a couple things here, a couple stories. So when Olin was the first time your contract came up, you had a chance to leave and go to Miami. And I'll never forget the sweat, because we did not want to lose the best leader in the locker room. And there was a lot of sweating going on hoping and praying that we would get Olin Klutsch back, which we did. And it was very fortunate. It's been, I'm going to tell you, Olin, and this is not kissing your ass, but one of the things that I really, and Lovey used to tell me this all the time, that the locker room has to lead it. You've got to have the right leaders in the locker room to lead it. I mean, coaches can coach and be great coaches, but at the end of the day, you're only going to go as far as that locker room wants to hold each other accountable. And I thought Olin was one of the best that I've been around. I've told Quentin Nelson that, and I'm glad Quentin gets to spend time with you to make it, because he's one of the best teammates I've ever been on. But now it's about taking that next step and not being afraid to hold guys accountable when things aren't going the way they're going. The other story is how we got Robert Garza. I'm proud of this one because I was close with Robert. I'll never forget, Robert Garza had signed in Baltimore. And I was on there. It was in there in March or April, and I was on the road scouting for the spring, getting ready for the draft. And you know, I heard across the radio that Robert had signed, so I called Robert and just was going to proud of him, congratulations, glad everything worked out. And he goes, Chris, he goes, I took my physical and I'm on my way to Minnesota. And I said, what? He goes, yeah. He goes, I took my physical on my way to Minnesota. So I called Jerry right away, and I said, look, we got to do whatever it takes to get Robert Garza. I said, he flunked his physical. He doesn't have an ACL. I said, but he's played 4 years without it. I said, this guy'll be a bear a long time if we sign him. And, you know, thankfully, Jerry had been in Tampa. I got to know Jerry, and we were splitting players out of Kingsville into Tampa at the time. Al Harris, Floyd Young, Kevin Doggins, George Diaz, all these kids went and played for him. So he knew when I was stamping a player from Kingsville and one that I'd been a part of, you know, coaching and been around him for my time in Kingsville, that there's a good chance he's going to work out.
Hey, Chris, we really appreciate the time. We know you've got some other things to do today, obviously, and we got to let you bounce. But one more thing before I let you go, I got to ask you. You are working for, I guess arguably you could put Robert Kraft out there, but Jim Irsay is the most successful owner in the National Football League really over the last 25, 30 years. You just look at the one loss record. He is also one of the most interesting people that I've ever had the pleasure of dealing with and spending some time with. I'm told he is just incredible to work for. What can you tell us about Jim Irsay? Because he certainly is not like most NFL owners.
So he's tremendous. And I've worked for good ownership groups. I've been lucky. You know, the McCaskies were great. They're great to my family. Great to work for. But Jim's, I'll never forget, you know, before I took the job, I talked to Bill Polian and Tony Dungy. And both of them, you know, you're talking about two Hall of Fame executive and a Hall of Fame head football coach. And both of them said the best owner they had worked for. And they were right. I mean, Jim has been a GM. It's one of the unique things working here in Indy. So on, like, tonight after the game and tomorrow when I talk to Jim, he's seen the game like a GM because he's been in the position. So when I talk to him about, I mean, I can't BS my way through it with him. He knows what he's looking at. And when we have issues on the roster, so that's one of the – he wants to win. He knows what he's looking at. But on the flip side of that, he's very patient. He understands how team building takes place. You know, those teams in Indy were drafted. Most of those guys were homegrown Colts, and that's what he wants to do here. We dipped some in the free agency because we had to. But, you know, our goal at the end of the day is to get as many – players that we've drafted and continue to have them as coaches for as long as we can have them. And that he understands that takes some time. But he also, on the flip side of that, he wants to win. He desperately wants to win. and he wants to do it the right way. So that's a pretty cool thing for me as a GM to be able to work for an owner that understands the game and understands what he's looking at.
Chris, I hope, I know you understand. We can't really wish you luck today, but we certainly wish you the best of luck.
You wish me all the luck I want. all the luck you want.
Well, we could, but we'd have some problem with the people that are coming on after you. So it's that we're going to be careful. We really do want to wish you the best of everything in Indianapolis, though. Couldn't be happier for you for the way it's working out down there. And can't thank you enough for taking time out to join us today.
No, thanks for having me on. Hey, appreciate Owen. Appreciate it, Pat.
Thanks, Chris, man. Awesome.
Thanks, Chris. Great job chatting with you.
Be good. Thank y'all.
That is the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts, Chris Ballard, longtime Chicago Bears scout and personnel director. You know, guys, we got to get to a break. I was going to ask Chris, you know, about the two times that he was a candidate for the Bears job, but it just didn't seem fair. I mean, what's he going to say? You know, it didn't work out. But I had forgotten, because it's been a while, how accessible he always was and how much fun he always was to talk to as a Bears scout. And one of those people who would actually tell you something. You know, not a guy, who'd see, oh, media coming, I can't say anything. And it's certainly not surprising. I know you guys probably agree to see the success he's having in Indianapolis.
Yeah, and that question you need to ask him in a bar over a few beers, and then,
yeah, <right? laughs>
and then he'll answer them. But, you know, Pat, I think, you know, I didn't want to speak for everybody, but I think that's the way you felt when you talked to Chris, no matter where we'd see him, right? And Chris would be in the weight room, and he'd be always downstairs around the players talking story. And you always left thinking, this guy's going to run a team one day, and he's going to be successful.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And that's just what impressed me the most is how he talked to everybody and tried to get better himself by just talking to every player. Like I said, whether it was talking to me about long snapping, Robbie about kicking, anybody about anything, you about playing center, he just always tried to make himself better. And it just, yeah, you knew he was going to make it. You knew he was going to be, you know, a head guy at some point.
Yep.
All right, where are they now? Guest today, Chris Ballard, the general manager of the Indianapolis Colts. Special props to Patrick Manley for putting that one together for us. We need to take a quick break. We're late. Joel, I apologize. Joel Erickson of the Indianapolis Star, is going to give us the rundown on these Indianapolis Colts. We'll get to Joel in just a minute right here at the Score.
They're really working in unison right now. That front line, man, they get after you. They're nasty. They really do. And then those linebackers just flat out can run. And then their DBs are opportunistic ball hawks that just make plays. I mean, they are playing really, really good defensive football right now. I think they're well coached, and it's sound football. You see it on tape. I don't care, you know, who you're playing, when you're playing, and why you're playing. They're good. And so we know that we're going to have our hands full. They do a lot of really good things, and we got to be able to match their intensity for sure.
Chicago Bears head coach Matt Nagy talking about today's opponent, the Indianapolis Colts. We're going to get you some more now. Go a little deeper on today's opponent. Joel Erickson is on the beat for the Indianapolis Star. And Joel, you've got Hub Arkish, Olin Krutz, and Patrick Manley. I apologize. I know we're about 5 minutes late. As you can imagine, not your GM, but the Colts GM, Chris Ballard, an old associate and friend of ours, good enough to join us for a few minutes. And when Chris starts telling stories, we start to run a little bit longer. So please forgive us for being late, but thank you so much for taking time out to join us this morning.
Yeah, no problem. I'm used to Chris telling stories now, so I understand how he ends up kind of taking a little extra time.
Yeah, I got to imagine between GM Chris Ballard and owner Jim Irsay, the Colts beat may be a little more entertaining than some.
Yeah, but Irsay, Ballard, Frank Reich is I don't know that Frank is super entertaining in press conferences, but He likes to play along a little bit, so it's a pretty easy cover right now as far as covering the top guys.
So, Joel, we want to get into what the Colts and the Bears can expect of each other today a little bit, and I think from the outside looking in, when you say Indianapolis Colts, everybody initially thinks about that offensive line and that running game. Obviously, the loss of Marlon Mack for the season is going to put a dent in that, but with Nyheim Hines, with the rookie Jonathan Taylor, you would think that they would still try and dominate that way. It looks from the outside, though, that maybe they're not running quite as much, or at least not quite as well as they have in the past couple of years.
Yeah, we haven't seen a game yet where they've really asserted themselves up front. the way they kind of have the last year and a half, ever since Matt came back that first year with Luck. I don't really know exactly why. They've got all the right guys. They had some trouble with Quinnen Williams last week from the Jets. He kind of moved Quentin around a little bit, moved Ryan Kelly around a little bit in ways that they're not used to. But there hasn't been a game where they're blowing open holes like they have been. Taylor, as a rookie, is still kind of learning how the hole's going to open at the NFL level, so that's played a role too. So they haven't had the dynamic game, but one thing that the Bears should expect is that they're going to stick to the run. I think one of the big lessons they took away from the Jacksonville game was that the Colts need to stick to the run no matter if it looks great or if it's just average. They kind of need to hammer it home because that's the style they play.
Hey, Joel, you know, Philip Rivers has been added this year by Chris Ballard as the quarterback. Can you kind of give a breakdown of how his play has gone this year, and are they happy with what they've seen so far?
I think they're very happy with what they've seen so far. He was brought in really to do a couple of things. He was brought in to get the completion percentage back up in the offense, get yards per attempt back up, and to bring explosive plays back up. All those numbers across the board are much higher than they were last year. It's not sustainable, but right now he's completing 78% of his passes, leading the league. That's about 20% higher than Jacoby Brissett was down the stretch last year. Their yards per attempt is at 8.1. Jacoby was at like 6.5. And they have 11 explosive. They're averaging almost 4 explosive passes a game, whereas last year they averaged just a tick under 2. So all those things are better. The two interceptions he threw against Jacksonville, I think, made the headlines. But in terms of what he was supposed to change in this Colts offense, he's been able to do that.
Hey, this is Olin Krutz here. I'd like to talk about the Colts' defense actually a little bit and just how good they actually are when I watch them on film. And us understanding the Tampa 2, especially here in Chicago, with DeForest Buckner at the 3 technique and Darius Leonard at the wheel linebacker. And even I'm really impressed with this Kenny Moore at nickelback. But can you just talk to us about why they've been playing so well and what the Bears offense will be facing today when they line up against this Colts defense?
Well, you drew a line there in the triangle that Matt Eberflus says is the most important one, from Buckner to Leonard to Moore. Those are the three spots that he considers hot spots in this defense. They brought in Buckner because they needed Moore out of that position. They need somebody who was going to bring a problem for defenses game in and game out. We've seen that over the last couple of weeks, and what it's done is it's made the rest of the defensive line better, especially Danico Autry, who's the guy he kind of displaced from that spot. Danico was playing 3 technique. He's now a defensive end. He's had 3 very, very good weeks in terms of pressure, in terms of sacks, the way he's been playing. They've really gotten quarterbacks off their spot, and that's kind of started everything for them. They've always done a good job swarming and tackling, but the last 2 weeks against Cousins and Darnold, those guys started out completing passes, looking accurate, and the more the rush got after them, you could see the ball starts to come out more erratically. They get inaccurate throws, and they get interceptions. So you're starting to see the way that the defense is supposed to look, and it really all starts with Buckner.
Breaking news here, guys. The Dallas Cowboys offense is good. They've got 2 first period touchdowns on Cleveland. More breaking news. The Dallas defense really sucks. The Browns have got 2 touchdowns as well. It's 14-14 early in the second period. Joel, I watch the tape of Darius Leonard and I marvel sometimes. I mean, this is a guy, it's not like he was unheard of. It's not like he was a late draft pick, but a day 2 pick, a guy a lot of people weren't all that familiar with. And I think arguably the best 4-down linebacker in football right now. And what strikes me about him is not even so much the way he plays the run. Usually these linebackers, you expect to be big blitzers. He is as good in coverage as any, 3-4 outside linebacker I've ever seen. He's not playing 3-4, I understand, but he's that type of player. And yet in coverage, he's outstanding.
Yeah, and I think after his rookie year, Darius is one of these guys that just internalizes every negative thing that's ever said about him. And after his rookie year, I think the knock was as good as his season was. I think there were some aspects of the NFL community that said, well, he's not great in coverage. He's just kind of average or good in coverage. And Darius takes that stuff to heart. Last year, according to several analytics sites, he was one of the better coverage linebackers in football. We've seen it from him here. It's not just that he can run. It's that he can make plays on the ball. It's kind of his defining characteristic is that he's got good ball skills in forcing fumbles and creating interceptions, but it shows up in the passing game too, where he's running deep down the field with somebody and he gets that hand out and bats the ball away. Something that's a lot kind of hard for a lot of linebackers to do. We've seen it a lot this season.
Hey, Joe, let's get to the main event of the evening. Wondering what they're saying to Colts offensive line, who are extremely good. Got really good players across their front. Costanzo, Quentin Nelson, Ryan Kelly, Glowinski, Braden Smith versus Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack and Roy Robinson Harris and Bilal Nichols. What have they've been saying this week about getting those guys blocked? And more importantly, what have they been saying about slowing down Akeem Hicks, who has 3.5 sacks?
Well, I think they mostly what they've said is those guys are really, really good. they spent a lot of time talking about how good this pass rush is, the guys they've got, the Bears have on defense. They haven't said a lot about what they're going to do, but I know this. Frank Reich cares more than most coaches about protecting the quarterback, and so I assume that the game plan is going to be built around that, whether that's leaning on the run, whether it's leaning on the screen. They've only given up, it's like the stats say they've given up 3 sacks, but they've really just given up 1, because one of the sacks was against Brissett, and one was a scramble with Rivers that Rivers is so slow, he just could only get back to the line of scrimmage. So they've been pretty good through the first couple weeks, haven't played a front like this. I assume they spent a lot of time this week worried about those guys you mentioned.
Hey, Joel, quick question. What is a Mo Alley Cox? for the Chicago Bears fan that is not familiar with number 81, the team's leading receiver, can you kind of give a background of who he is and how he's come on and been the star he is?
Well, if Bears fans watch the NCAA basketball tournament, they'll remember him from when he was a basketball player at VCU. On some of those good teams that went kind of deep. Now, as a football player, he's enormous, first of all. He's goes 6'5"-ish, 260, 265. He's got the only guy in the league, I think, who has hands as big as Allie Cox's is DeForest Buckner. He's got enormous hands, but he's really been mostly a blocker for the Colts in the previous 2 years leading up to this. And he had some issues with drops, had some issues with route running. He's a basketball player who had to learn what he's trying to do. The Colts have kind of been surprised by him, honestly. I don't know that they were expecting him to have this much of an impact. But Bears fans need to be worried about him down the field. He's made a lot of plays down the field. Colts tight ends right now are averaging something like 16.5 to 17 yards a catch. That's been a big part of the explosive play part of their offense. And Allie Cox is good at getting the ball down the field. That you can throw it up to him because of the big hands. But they're going to get him to him in a lot of ways. And the tight end position, I think, is the one to watch for Indianapolis today with some injuries at wide receiver.
Joel Erickson does an outstanding job covering the Colts for the Indianapolis Star. You can follow him on Twitter at Joel A. Erickson. Joel, we're going to have to let you bounce. But before we do, I'm curious. You know, the Bears are one of 7 undefeated teams in the league at 3-0, but Bears fans are realistic enough to know they really should be 1-2, and they could be 0-3. And yet you take the 3-0. You look at the Colts, nobody saw that upset in Jacksonville coming on opening day. And, yeah, they've pounded lumps on teams the last couple of weeks, but let's be honest, the 0-3 Vikings, the 0-3 Jets. Jets may be the worst team in football. What are Colts fans, what's the Colts media saying about this team? I mean, should we be excited about the 2-1 start? Are they legitimate contenders, or do they still have as many questions as the Bears do?
I think the reaction to the Colts right now is we still have to wait and see. For all the reasons you just mentioned, they had the clunker in Jacksonville. The teams they beat don't have any wins. There's still some skepticism that the defense has really taken that next step. Because you want to see it against offenses that are playing better. I think the whole feeling around the Colts is we might not know until mid-October. The schedule, the Bears, I think, are probably the best litmus test in here in the first 7 games. But I don't know we're going to know about the Colts until the back half of the schedule when they start playing the Baltimores, some of these division teams, Tennessee, those kind of things. I don't know we're going to know really what they are. I'm kind of looking at this game against the Bears as maybe the best chance to figure out what the Colts are going to look like going forward this season.
Well, Joel, it's interesting because I know that Bears analysts are saying the exact same thing. This is a really big game for both ball clubs today. We do appreciate you taking time out for us this morning. Again, you can follow Joel on Twitter at Joel A. Erickson, beat reporter for the Colts at the Indianapolis Star. Have a good game today, Joel. Folks, we are going to take a commercial break here on the Bet Rivers Sportsbook pregame show. Make sure you get to BetRivers.com and download the app, the Bet Rivers Sportsbook app. Next up, we're going to take some phone calls if you'd like at 312-644-6767. You can text us at that number as well. And we've gotten through the entire first hour of our pregame show talking about the Indianapolis Colts. It's been an interesting week for the Bears as well. Olin, Patrick, and I will break it all down for you. We're coming up next right here at The Score.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.